You are listening to Journeys on Revolution Radio on freedomslips.com and simulcast with wolfspiritradio.com. Join JP, your tour guide today, on this journey of discovery from the known to the unknown in search of enlightenment, knowledge, and truth.
April 28th, 2014. Welcome to Journeys with JP. Well, here we are. A solar eclipse, a grand cross, a lunar eclipse. I feel like I've just had two enormous blades slide by like a pair of enormous scissors cutting the past away. I feel refreshed and renewed. My guest tonight, Nancy Hopkins. We're going to talk Shungite, but first, let's talk energies of the moment. Nancy, good evening.
Hi, Jay. How are you? I'm still reading the latest sheet of Shungite material I got. But yes, the energies are rather awesome, aren't they?
Yeah, so, you know, there's been some major kind of reconciliations and major kind of breakups, and this is just in my own personal life, and as always, you know, that's my barometer for the world, and seeing the way that the world is moving, and it is coming more into balance. The things are moving into the right places. What do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, every day I go on and look at something, and it doesn't have to be on the internet, but you just keep seeing more and more awakening. They're subtle, but they're definitely happening. People are waking up, yeah. And the more people wake up, the more we talk about why they're waking up, the more the energy builds. It just keeps getting, you know, like faster or more intense or whatever, but the people that are just letting it happen and going with it, knowing that it's a great ride, they're going to have a fun time. Anybody that's fighting it, you know, and is like, you know, just relax, let it go, run with it, and then look for the good things. Stop looking for the bad things. Look for the good things, because they are out there in droves.
Yeah, in a way, I mean, it's the people who've woken up early who have had to deal with all the bad things, so to speak. You know, we've been, like, these earlier waves have been dealing with all the darkness, and really, you know, it's a matter of letting go of your own stuff. You know, like I've been saying, this solar cross, this grand cross, feels like walking through a turnstile where you have to lift up your arms, so you can't carry things if you've got your arms outstretched, and you can't take it with you, so you have to let it go. You have to let the past just bye-bye.
Well, not only that, I think that there is something that when we talk timelines, we focus on a timeline shift, and we think, okay, the timeline shifted, and so now we have a different future. But in reality, we also have a different past. And so things that were very bothersome to some people were very negative. Some people were on the, you know, evil maybe. On this timeline, they don't necessarily have to be. Because you always have different people. Of course, I was never bad, right? But you always have different timelines. The people that are on them are adjusting to those timelines and take on different configurations of their own being, if you will. So when you shift a timeline, not only do you shift the present and the future, but you've shifted the past. And I'm trying to get people to realize that all this stuff that was there in the past is not there. It was on a different timeline. Just let it go. You've stepped into another timeline where, you know, things from the past on the other one are not necessarily still on this one. And, you know, instead of people just worrying about what happened in the past, just let it go. It's not there anymore. Just let it go. And proceed gung-ho towards the future.
It's really a feeling of moving easily into the new. It's like, well, it feels like, you know, you we parachuted in, we haven't taken the parachute off. You know, it's still kind of schlepping around behind us, dragging in the dirt, getting heavier and heavier. All this is all our, you know, emotional attachments, and one by one we've been cutting the cords to the parachute. Now we've realized that you can actually just take the little harness off and just walk through the turnstile. And I think anybody who's managed to survive till today, intact, you know, it's time to rebuild and it's time to build your new life. I think
you might already be there, Jay. I mean, I really kind of think that we're in almost like a parallel universe, only it's a parallel world. I really do believe that Dolores Cannon talking about a new Earth is correct. And I think that the framework, the energetic framework, is there, and we're moving into a singularity, and at some point we're going to completely merge, and the new Earth will be, you know, overtake the old Earth. But right now the energies of the new Earth are already manifesting. So those of us that have been in the game for a long time, we can feel the shift. You know, I mean, you know what it was like when you were walking around by yourself saying, does anybody see something wrong? You know, and everybody's going, no, nothing's wrong, you know?
Yeah, you're wrong. that's what they used to say.
You must be something wrong with you, you know? But now we've got droves and droves and droves of people who are awakening. I can tell that because, like I say, I've got two groups that I administer to, and I'm getting, the members are all newbies. You know, they're less than 3 months on Facebook, and they're being drawn to groups that can explain things to them. And so, you know, when I see that, I just go, oh God, they are awakening. They're waking up. And some of the things that they say, I go, okay, because you understand it. They're fearful. They're going like, you know, okay, I've jumped into this thing and now I'm seeing all this bad stuff. And that's why those of us that have been there, we have to accept that the message has been heard. They understand there's problems, and now we have to really work for solution. I mean, that's got to be the primary focus of everything that we do, is now solution. I had somebody that wanted to post on Cosmic Reality Group on Facebook about the pedophile problem. And I went to her and I said, look, I understand there's a problem. I understand it's so awful, but there is nothing any of us can do about that specific problem until we get out of the ones we can fix. And I think we have to start doing this. Yes, there's awful things there, but we can't focus on them. If we focus on all the negativity, then we're not focusing on solutions. And the quantum energy generator is, I don't know if you saw the post today, but they got power in Morocco. And, I mean, every time I see one of these things start to go and then the lights come on, you know, I start crying. Because every single time, it's another victory. Because of the quantum energy generator actually works so much with the energy field of Earth and everything else, the biosphere, that you actually have to tune it for the location. And that's what they knew. That was this is my understanding, that they understood that it's really position, you have to tune for the position locale. And that was what they were fighting, were assuming was going to be the most problematic. Yet they got the one in Taiwan going, and the Morocco one, John was actually surprised because he had to do very little tuning. So I suspect that once they get these things positioned in different places and up and running, the tuning will become less and less because the whole system will start to generate in a quantum entanglement way, that it will start to generate a more flexible frequency.
Well, it sounds like, I can't remember exactly who I was listening to, who was talking about the Schumann wave is different at different latitudes, and it's like 7.83 as an average, and but it, that it varies according to your latitude, how far north you are or south you are.
Exactly, and that's what's causing the tuning problems. But that's what I'm saying, is that the more that they get into the more you intensify the use of that, it's going to feed back. Anytime you have an energy system that is working, you are having extraneous energy that is coming off of the devices. You may not measure, be able. Well, it's like the electronics in the house. You know, I mean, we've got these electrical system that's feeding all these electronics, but all of this electricity and the electronic signals, they're bleeding into the house. That's why we have electromagnetic pollution, and so that's a bad thing. But if you're working with the QEGs, then you're feeding back into it, and it's a good thing. I suspect the more that they have up, the less problem they're going to have with tuning. It's just, exactly. It's resonance, if everybody could see in terms of energy, then you would understand that every time you have an energy, you change everything. Add an energy, change everything. And it's you know, whether it's good or bad depends on what the end result, not that the end justifies the means, it's just that, you know, sometimes it's, you get negative reactions because we cannot handle the energy coming off of this crap that we have in our house. But in regards to the QEG, the intent behind it, to bring power to the world that does not have power right now. I mean, to me, that's amazing. They're focusing on getting it to the remote countries. I can't remember. They had one in South America that they have now got some amazing funding for. I don't think they've got it up and running, but they've got funding for it. So even without the demonstration of it in their own locale, there are groups of people that are already getting funding for it. So it's taking off. It's, you know, and all we need is one thing like this to take off. If you can take this thing and run from the power of the earth, basically, the biosphere, and not have to worry about oil, everything changes. Everything changes. So I see very incredible, powerful movement in that field. This thing looks like it's working. And
a couple of years ago, a guy came up to Findhorn to give us a talk. His name was George Monbiot, and he writes for The Guardian and things like that. And he was actually trying to sell nuclear power to hippies because it was greener. We're looking at each other. It's like, this guy is such a Zionist shill. It's unbelievable. You know, Rothschild, nuclear power guy. But, you know, the argument he gave for, like, why we're not going to be allowed to have free energy is that, well, people are only just going to use it, aren't they? Yeah,
oh my God.
They're gonna like industry is gonna go wild you know, just cause enormous global warmings with the what a load of tosh.
Well, some of the stuff you hear these people say, you go, and you have a degree from some school. You know, it's like you're talking like an idiot. Common sense tells you that, you know, if you got radiation, it's not going to be good for you, no matter what it might be gaining for you. You know, that's not going to work. But the QEG, I think is the answer. It's taken on a life of its own. It's going to be very difficult to stop it at this point. If it works, it's going to work, and it's going to work everywhere.
So let's talk about the QEG for a minute, about what its principle is. You're saying what's it made of? What's inside it? Is there something moving? You start it up. Is it a magnet motor?
I'm not sure. I've got the blueprints, but I have not taken the time to look at them. My lay explanation for what I understand it to be is that they're basically using the same concept of electromagnetic generation, but they're using it at a different frequency that is causing a resonation with Earth. So you've got the Earth vibration, and because now you are just tuning the frequency to that particular frequency being emitted by Earth, your system will all of a sudden start to resonate with the particular frequency being put out by Earth at that particular location. And so what's happening is that now you're feeding by resonance off of a power source that is not stoppable. It's Earth. It's the vibration of Earth. That's what I think they're doing.
Well, it's interesting, my girlfriend Wolf Baby will attest to this. I have a rack of mugs. Now, this sounds like a stupid analogy, but it works. I have a rack of mugs, you know, like hooks, and my mugs for tea and coffee, and they hang up. And there's two mugs that are just exactly the right kind of distance away from each other, that when I put them up there, they kind of swing backwards and forwards. And underneath the worktop is my freezer. And this freezer's got this when it's running. And there's some kind of feedback between the freezer, the worktop, the board that it's on, and these two mugs, is that I touch that mug and it will swing for 10 minutes. Ding 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 ding. Because it's being vibrated by the fridge underneath it, and so there's this resonance. It's just exactly the right kind of conditions, like you're saying. It's just in tune for this thing to keep swinging. And obviously, you know, if I put a magnet on there and the coil, I could probably produce a tiny amount of electricity from this phenomenon. But I'm not going to bother with that. But it's using the vibration that is ambient to create some kind of motion. I hope that is some kind of analogy to what you're talking about here. Nancy, have I lost you? Have I lost me? Have I lost the station?
Yeah. I'm sorry, I had the mic off. I've been talking to myself. What can I do?
I'm sorry. Again.
Yeah, no. Well, yes, exactly about the teacups. I agree that is a simplistic representation of what I understand the system to be working as. But those kind of examples are all over the place if you just look at them. There was a YouTube thing that was a series of pendulums that were on different wires, and I posted it this morning. And when the guy let them put a board behind him and pulled them all up and then just let them go, because of the different basically wavelengths, because of the wires, okay, the lengths of the wires was giving a different frequency, these things started dancing together. And they went on for well over 5 minutes, I think maybe. Yeah, it must have been. I don't even remember. But I was just fascinated because they went into this incredible dancing. And I said in the post, I said, gee, somebody ought to do a PhD dissertation on this, because it was exhibiting, and they, whoever did it, said it was gravity. It had nothing to do with gravity. It was the movement of these things, and as they're passing each other, setting up resonant energy fields that would cause them to take off with more power. There's all sorts of things that we see in nature that, if we really analyzed it as energy in motion, instead of gravity working everything, you'd begin to see the magic of what they're doing here. And of course, this was the Tesla did this way back in the early part of the 20th century. So it's not like it's new information, but you have to be able to understand the tuning. And how do you tune it? Why doesn't that, you know, you think you got the theory. And Tesla was not absolutely there. I mean, they had to work to get his system to operate, because theoretically it would operate, but it was the tuning thing. Oh, it'll operate, but you have to tune it. And how he he finally broke through the concept of tuning is beyond me. I mean, that was a gift from, you know, the gods or the spirits or the guides or something, because that's the key to it all, is just tuning to the earth.
Yeah, and like we were saying before, and I'm still unable to remember the person who was talking about. It was a guy, this is going to come to me sometime at 3 a.m. this morning. And he was saying that according to the latitude, your human resonance is different from 7.83. Could be as low as 7.42, or, you know. So, so this getting a very subtle tuning. It's a bit like, well, what happens is, if you're in a concert hall and you have a certain amount of distortion in the PA, the room has a resonance, so that when you go oi, then you hear this hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo. And then if you were to play that note, that's the resonance of the room. So you only need a very small amount of energy, so you could do it with your voice, and you go oh, and you get this enormous sound because the room amplifies at that frequency. And this is, again, you're able to get a large amount of energy for a small amount of input, and that's the QEG. Is that it's kind of, I think what it is, it's like an electric motor that is driving a magnetic motor that's driving an electric generator, and it feeds back, but it feeds back according to the resonant frequency that it's sitting in. And it's just like being able to get the right distance and the right angle of the hooks, so that those mugs would swing exactly right.
Yeah, that's the way I understand it. And so, but, you know, it'll be interesting to see, you know, because for all we know, it's because as we travel through the universe here, we're changing position, we're changing bioelectromagnetic fields, we're changing. Everything changes all the time because everything is connected to everything else. One of the things, I told this story a number of times, but they did find that long-range space trips with the cosmonauts was causing them to come back crazy. And they tied it to the fact that their bioelectromagnetic field in the spacecraft was not the natural field that their brains were supposed to operate in. So, and they're just above the field. So when you have a bioelectromagnetic change within the Earth itself, yes, we're all going to be affected. When people say, oh, I don't know what's happening, it must be Mercury in retrograde, well, they're not kidding, because it's energy, it's changes in energy. And sometimes those changes in energy are beneficial and they will uplift us, and we're in that phase right now. Every time we come to this part of the universe, it's like, to me, it's the start. It's the start. Well, it's the start because the Mayans agree that you had the last age and now you're starting a new age. The Hopis agree we're in a new age. Everybody that's watched this, you know, through traditional teachings know that we're in a new age. It's a new starting point. And every time we start off, it's we're given new gifts. There's something changed in the everything. And we know this, that the half-life of minerals has changed. The DNA in great apes has changed. We're seeing more and more children that obviously are much more intelligent and tuned in than, you know, those before. But they're not letting us know, well, is there DNA changes? They're not going to tell us that. But I'm sure there is. And according to numerous sources, and I'm talking not necessarily metaphysical sources, but you've got all this junk DNA, you know, that the West calls it junk DNA, the Russians call it, you know, a DNA internet. They've studied it extensively, and what they see is that this computer system that is based on DNA. But again, what's a computer system? A computer system is simply a device that allows light to travel. And when it's traveling, it's on, and when it's not on, it's off. And those give you the binary codes that gives us everything else that's on the internet. But it's basically light. It's light hitting so that you have a signal come through, or if it's not there, then the signal's not there, that's a zero. So you got the 1-0 binary code thing. Very simple. Just energy in or energy off. So when you think of what that little piece of science has resulted in, and you're thinking in terms of the DNA, it's the same thing. They actually can measure, in many ways, there's electric currents all over the body, but at the DNA level, they can measure light coming off of the DNA. The DNA signaling is light-based, and it's carrying more information than is even conceivable by the human mind. They are finding subsequences, like subprograms, that carry all of the languages that have ever been spoken. There's just like subprograms of all sorts of things that seems to be sitting there. And like I say, the Western scientists say it's junk. The Russians looked at it and said, no, it's not junk, it's information. So at some point, if you get the right kind of an energy field, it's likely that the one of these programs that are sitting there waking is going to wake up. And boom, you can have an instantaneous change in everything because of a change in the electromagnetic configuration of where the planet happens to be at any given moment. Once you understand energy and how incredibly powerful, and you know, energy is malleable. We think of material, and there is no matter. Quantum physicists will tell you that there is no matter. But if you think of something as being solid, well, it's hard to move. If you think of it as energy, you think, well, I can pass right through it. Well, you can pass right through it unless you're vibrating at the exact same energy level, and then it becomes solid to you. But that does not negate all of the changes that are occurring around us that we don't see as material, that are just happening, because they're operating at speeds faster than the speed of light, which is the frequency at which everything that's vibrating below the speed of light looks like it is solid. Anything above that is invisible to us. You can sometimes measure it. So yeah, the energy, and when you've got something like that Grand Cross, then something else kicks in, and that is not just a alignment of astronomical bodies, but it is also the alignment of human focus on a specific place in the universe. There was a lot of talk about this. There was a lot of emphasis on this. There's a lot of emphasis on this particular time because of the four eclipses that are happening. We had the lunar one, and I guess it's the sun one that's coming up next, right?
That's tonight.
Yeah. You know, and so every time you have mental energy added into put into the place picture, you've got more. It's a totally different ball game. You know, I mean, it's like a lot of times we think, oh my God, this event must be amazing because I'm feeling so weird. And it's not the event, it's the fact that over the millennium, people, thousands, millions of people have put in a lot of thought that this is an important thing. And so it becomes an important thing. One of the things that I use is sage. When, you know, the first time I saw somebody burning sage, and I go, what are you doing? Oh, I'm getting rid of the negativity. I doubled over laughing. I thought it was one of those insane things I'd ever seen. But now I understand what it is. It's not that the smoke is having this effect, although it is, because so many people believe it is. It's a powerful way of taking negativity out of a place, because so many people believe it. That's why a lot of times, you know, some drugs work when there's no specific reason why they should. People believe in it. So the power of the mind is something that we're only beginning to understand. Well, I think that the you know, the mystics and metaphysicians have understood it for, you know, forever. But scientists are only now starting to really grasp it. And that came from quantum study. You know, it's not like I'm telling anything that's new. This is old information. When they started to investigate molecules and electrons and protons, all at the tiny, teeniest way, they realized that human thought would affect any experiment that they were conducting. So that was where quantum physics, the scientists, began to appreciate the power of the human mind. But again, that's, you know, one of those things they don't want to tell us. You know, because if we all realized how powerful our minds were, the matrix would crumble in a heartbeat.
Sounds about time.
Yeah, way over time.
It won't be very long, I don't think, you know, really.
Say again?
That won't be very long, I don't think.
I don't think so. Because Dolores Cannon was promised that she would be alive when the New Earth happened, that got here, transformed or whatever. And she's in her late 70s, so it got to be soon, you know? I just love that. Yeah.
The whole thing about Dolores Cannon is it's kind of relative to part of what my guests were talking about last night. Did you tune into the show, Nancy?
No, Jay. I had somebody call me and I forgot. I spaced it out. I'm
okay,
sorry.
No problem. Yeah. Anyway, lovely couple. And they were talking about, they were regressionists and regression therapists and regression therapists, and they were talking about as a byproduct of some of the regressions they did, much like Dolores Cannon, came across various experiences in Atlantis and Egypt. And what she was saying is that, like, when Atlantis was destroyed, they were taken off planet. And the next thing she knew, she was in Egypt. And that really ties in with what Dolores was saying, is that their experience is that they were taken off planet and they could see the planet in a very short period of time go through thousands of years of regeneration. And then they were kind of plopped back in. What's your take on that, Nancy?
Well, what I found most interesting about her discussion of Atlantis, and granted, she's probably discussed it in many books. She's got those 17 books, and I've only gone through one. But the discussion in that book, which was the first of the four-book convoluted series, in that, she was saying that at the time of Atlantis, there were other civilizations on the planet that were fairly well-developed, but we only hear about Atlantis. And that when Atlantis was one of those places where I see so much of today. It's like, why are you doing that? Because we can. And they sort of did the same thing there. They were linked in with the pyramids. It was a system. It was a QEG on a massive scale. And it was misused by a group of the Atlanteans and caused a destruction all over the world. It basically blasted the grid, the Earth grid. And so when Atlantis was destroyed, the downfall was even affected these other civilizations. And that these other civilizations were able to kind of pick up the pieces and get moving again. So it was said, well, Edgar Cayce says that the people that were on Atlantis are here again to try to right the wrongs. You know, that they made some fundamental errors of theory. I think it's theory, you know, it's like, well, we should try this. No, you shouldn't. We should not be trying CERN. You don't mess with stuff like they're messing with at CERN. You know, let's have a little sense here. It's like I'm as guilty of it. I play with energies. I do some really, you know, not thinking of the consequences. Well, let's try this, you know. But I'm doing it on a small scale. I'm not building something that's, you know, tens of miles long and able to probably create a black hole. They claim they can't. I don't know, but it seems like it's possible. And you know, and you're messing with stuff you don't understand. It was like when you blew off the first atomic bomb, you didn't know if it wouldn't destroy everything, and yet you did it. What in the hell is the matter with these people? It's like, let's have a little common sense here. And we were talking about Atlantis. So a lot of the priests and the more enlightened people on Atlantis knew that they were in deep trouble, and they took a lot of the libraries and moved them to where they thought they would be safe. And one of them was in the Pyrenees Mountains of southern France and northern Spain. And the other one was in Egypt. And supposedly it's under the paw of the Sphinx. So there are repositories of Atlantean knowledge that I believe has already been accessed. But again, they're not going to tell us that.
I think there's another Sphinx as well, and I think it's under the floor of the other Sphinx.
There's something there. I mean,
if you look at the plan, you can see that the Sphinx is off to one side. It's not symmetrical, and everything in here, you know, they're not going to build something that's off to one side. And there's a great big mound of sand. But the thing is, the Egyptians don't want to. They probably radared it and scanned it and done the whole thing, but it ain't got an Egyptian face on it, and that's their problem.
Yeah, well,
probably Anubis, or some weird bird reptile god, you know.
When you study just the face itself, it's obvious that whatever face was there has been mucked with. It's not the same face. You know, who knows what face was originally on it? Who knows what the intent of it was? But there's something about it. There's something below it. So it might be the Atlantean, you know, treasure. But one of the things that has always intrigued me was the idea that the Atlanteans were using crystals that were actually obtained from other places in the universe. And I'm talking like crystals that are, you know, four stories high. And anybody that has believed or had visions or had, you know, out-of-body experiences with Atlantis, there's no getting away from the feeling of crystals, crystals, crystals. And one of the more intriguing stories is that they actually moved the crystals, and that they put two of them, there's five of them, they put two of them down in Brazil, and they put three of them in Arkansas. In the in Brazil, they have the biggest vein of quartz. In Arkansas, they have the second biggest, but it's the purest. And supposedly, in the caverns, deep in the caverns, of these crystal mines. I mean, they are mining it. They've been mining it. But way down deep is the three crystals. And that back in, oh my gosh, when was it? Was it 2011 or early 2012? When the black-tailed crows got knocked out, blackbirds got knocked right out of the sky over Arkansas. And supposedly what happened is that there was a piezoelectric charge of the three crystals. And this charge went up through the rock, and the birds were flying over, and they got hit with this blast and just fell out of the sky, because the birds were killed because of blunt force trauma of hitting the ground. So, yeah, energy is intense, and I probably shouldn't say that they may be there because maybe they'll go get them. Hey, if you see a lot of activity in the Arkansas mountains, you know what they're after.
Well, this is interesting because my guest last night also mentioned a location of buried Atlantean crystals, which was in England.
So, oh, really?
It's very likely that all of the places where things have appeared suddenly in the crops might be a clue. And stuff, if you see what I mean. There's a clue for you, those who have ears to hear. But here we go. We're at this point where we're beginning something new, really. It's like the whole old stuff has all but given up. Including, you know, and like you're saying, you know, about the corruption and what lies behind the corruption, nobody trusts politicians anymore. You know, every day we don't trust politicians, we don't trust police, we don't feel safe with police, we don't trust politicians, we're poisoned by our doctors. You know, the whole establishment is crumbling around our ears. It's not supporting us at all, and people are going to be fighting for their sense of freedom. Really, we don't need to fight. We just need to unfund it. Basically, you know, if you want to join the revolution, the best thing you want to do is you stop giving them money. Stop encouraging them by giving them money. If loads and loads of people do that, they won't be able to retaliate. The more people can do it, the more quickly it can happen. And, you know, people are very much, you know, they're seeing this whole Bundy thing. It's all a way of whipping up emotion just to kind of get things across, get an idea across, and it takes more and more energy to do it every time because more and more people are seeing through the ruse. So we've got the opportunity here to create our new reality. Now you've been talking in Cosmic Reality, your book, or one of your books, about the rules of cosmic reality, which is reality is what you think it is. Can you be a bit more specific about what you mean by think, Nancy?
Reality is, okay, it takes you back to John Locke, and he says that when you're born with a blank slate. Your brain doesn't have any preconceived notions, and that your society teaches you what is real. I think that there is a mind behind the brain, and that you can tap into the mind, and you can have access to powers that, if you go with John Locke's theory of just the brain being involved, that there's no higher self, there's no subconscious, you know. Well, okay, that's limited, but I don't believe in limiting the experiences that we have as human beings and as spirits. So at the 3D level, we know that the brain, our senses are so good at what they do that they pull in too much information. There is no way for the brain to digest every single thing that it sees. So what it does is we train the brain to pick up clues and be based on those clues to make a decision as to what is real. And where that becomes very interesting, there's a show, I'm not sure it's on right now, but it was about how your brain works. And what they would do is they would set people up in different ways to, you know, like somebody stealing somebody's pocketbook, and then what did you see? You know? Because the reality to the people as to who stole the pocketbook, if it was a pocketbook, what they were wearing, all of this stuff was dependent on the position they were in their view of what was happening. We know that eyewitnesses are the worst people to give any evidence because they're only seeing it from their own perspective. And not only from the perspective of place, but also what is happening internally in their own heads. So, but we know that the brain only takes in a certain amount of information and then makes a supposition as to what is really happening.
Yeah, we create the story.
We create the story. So we know that that's the way the brain works, all right? Now, in the reality that's being presented to us, we're only being given a certain amount of information. They keep the secrets in science. They keep the secrets in history. They keep the secrets in all sorts of stuff to prevent us from understanding what is real. All right? So we're looking at life, and we're looking at it based on a certain database. And the people behind the database that have fed it to us know. And that's where you come to the concept of reality is what we think it is. The majority wins, but the third one being that those in power keep everybody from knowing rules one and rule two, because they're trying to control reality. So they want to keep us in the dark as to the fact that we are powerful energy systems that can use thought energy to not just reassess what we see, but to actually change it. Thought is incredibly powerful. It will change reality. And I've seen this continually. I mean, I didn't just write the rules of cosmic reality. I lived them. I understood what you know, they taught me how they work and to see it. And one of the clearest examples I can give you of that is that the sun has changed. If you go out and you look at the sun, or you look at pictures of the sun, that sun is white. It is no longer yellow. But most of us, if we think of the sun in our heads, we're thinking of the yellow sun. It's not yellow anymore. It's white. It hurts your eyes to look at it during the day. I mean, it really does. So you would think that a change in the sun of this magnitude would be something that everybody would be going, oh my God, what's happened to the sun? But our brains were designed to assume that the sun is always going to look the same. So if you see a ball of light in the sky that you know is the sun, it's yellow because your brain can't process all of the information. But your brain can be tricked. And that was what that mind thing that they were doing was so interesting. It showed how little things would, you know, completely baffle the mind. And I was driving home every night, and I would be driving right into the sunset. But on the drive home, there was a 90-degree turn. And when, you know, it's a highway, but it takes a 90-degree turn. And when I take this 90-degree turn one night, one during sunset, all of a sudden, the sun caught the side rear mirror, and I was like, what the heck is that? Because all I saw was this white thing. Because my brain was not anticipating seeing the sun, and it sees this white thing, it doesn't know what it is, and so it starts to process, what the hell could this possibly be? And it went, oh my God, it's the sun. How did the sun get so white? And after that point, I could look at the sun and see it as white. But up until then, no, I was looking directly at it and still seeing a yellow sun. So for as long in my reality as I was seeing a yellow sun, it was yellow. But once I realized it's not yellow, it's white, then all of a sudden a whole slew of rules and regulations and thoughts, you know, started crumbling, because if the sun has changed and nobody's realizing it, what does this mean? But in the scheme of my reality, when I ask a question, I get an answer. And so I got an answer from one of David Wilcox's contacts, Daniel, and he wrote a paper, PDF paper, on the sun and why everything that we know about it is actually in reverse, and that instead of a yellow sun going into eventually into a red sun, it's actually the other way around. And what happens is that you've got this yellow sun that we had for all this time, 27,000 years, and we get into this go situation again that we find ourselves, the proton belt, for lack of another word, the proton belt, which is full of all sorts of cosmic rays and energies from coming out from the center of the sun, being blown towards us by the black sun. They'll sometime realize that at the 3D below speed light that we see being sucked into the black holes, there is another faster than speed energy that is being propelled out of the black holes. It's a fact of science. You put in energy, you're going to have some energy come out. So that energy is now directed towards us, and we're in it. And all of this dust and this radiation and everything is fuel for the sun. So the sun gobbled it up and went from a yellow sun to a white sun. Now, it's also gotten bigger. But we couldn't feel that either, because in the geometry of existence, you have certain relationships of geometric links that are energy links, but they're geometric. So when the sun gets bigger, the earth gets bigger and moves farther away from the sun, so that you have a continual the ratio between everything is the same. But if you're in the middle of it, you can't feel it. You can't feel that this is happening. The Eskimos saw it happening. They started trying to tell the white people that there's something wrong with the sun and the moon. They're not coming up in the same place in the sky. And that was because we were in a transitionary period where the sun is moving bigger and the earth isn't quite caught up. So at that moment, the Eskimos were looking at the sun and the moon because they're using it to transverse, you know, white blinding snow for large distances. And the only thing they got are those key points, and they kept getting lost. And those people saw it. There were other people in the higher elevations. There was one woman who called her mother frantic. She said, "There's something wrong with the sun. It's not coming up. It's not coming up in the right place in the sky." And she came home every day at sunrise. And she one day she suddenly realized the sun's not coming up in the right spot. So there were reports, but nobody was. I mean, I tried to get people interested in this, and they were all like, kind of freaked out. They didn't want to think about it. But then I realized what was happening. In those reports, I stopped hearing about them. So, how did we get into that discussion?
Well, it's interesting. I was talking with my girlfriend last night about black holes and stars, and I was saying a similar thing, which was that stars absorb gravity and emit light, and black holes absorb light and emit gravity.
Yes, gravity and other stuff that we don't even know about yet, I'm sure. You there?
Yep. A mouthful of sandwich.
I thought maybe you were snacking. You could just message me snacking, and I could keep talking.
No, cover me, help! I'm snacking. No, I've been very good today. I've been trying to avoid sugar today because I woke up and my entire skin was inflamed, and I know that my skin gets inflamed when I eat too much sugar. So it's good to be able to get the feedback from your body. Hey, boss, stop shoveling that crap down.
Well, people would be healthy if they would listen to their bodies. You know, I mean, the body knows more about what it needs and what it doesn't want. And, you know, just feel what feels good. I know that I'm having a problem now with meat. It's not, you know, it's just like I just don't seem to be feeling the affinity for it. Which is, you know, everybody talks, well, not everybody, but, you know, those that seem to know talk about the fact that as we change the frequency of our bodies, we're going to find, you know, the heavier foods that it's just not going to feel good. And I went, not me, I ain't going to give up my meat, you know, but lately I'm going like, I'm not enjoying this hamburger. So I don't know what that's all about, but again, it's energies. You know, you're the guy that was on your show that was Nolte, the Lincoln. One on the the one on the water, the restructuring of the water. You know, he points out something that is so very basic. It's like, you know, you put in this food, and then you eliminate the food from your system. And, you know, it's like the same amount that you put in that you're now eliminating. And so what was all that about? It was about energy. It's the energy that's being taken out of the food. So if you begin to vibrate at a higher frequency where you essentially can start using light and sound and, you know, all sorts of different things to feed your body with energy, then you need less and less food. I mean, there is that one guy in India, I hope he's still alive, who was like 25 years never doing anything except water, but making sure that he was up every morning to get the sun. And it's his belief that the energy from the sunrise is what is going inside his system and nurturing his system. And I worked 25 years as a night maintenance engineer in a condominium. And every morning, you know, over 5,000 sunrises, I stood there and saw and watched come up. And I kept eating. But I sometimes wonder if it wasn't that doing that sunrise thing every day that didn't keep me healthy, because I was like not sleeping. I mean, I had a night shift. And the most I would sleep at any given time was like 4 hours. And that could be, you know, that any time of the day, but no more than 4 hours. And many times it was 2 hours here and 2 hours there, and I did it for 25 years. Why didn't I get sick? Because I was going out every morning into the sunrise. I didn't put it together. I kept saying, you people who are sleeping like that are dead. You know, get up and enjoy life. And now that I don't go out to the sun, I go, oh, my God, how did I survive that? But it, you know, it's energy. We're energy bodies, and that's why, you know, minerals like shungite, that, you know, it works with us.
We'll be back on the other side of the break, and we'll be talking about why shungite is good for you and why you should buy some from Nancy. Or me.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio. Freedom Slips to us. We're already here.
A challenge. Let's give him one.
The voice that whispers in your ears, or the screams that you fear. The mind you cannot defy is the heart that rules mankind. The people who made you are the gods that will save you. And I am Steve Travesty. I am the voice. The ghost in the machine. Ghost in the Machine, Tuesdays, 8 p.m., Studio A.
Right here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, where information never sleeps.
Join the Sacred Matrix with hosts Janet Kira Lesson and Dr. Sasha Lesson, 6 p.m. Eastern Time here on Revolution Radio.
Here we free ourselves from the God spell, transform the perverted matrix to the divine one. We become conscious and we embrace universal unlimited love.
We feature colorful guests and topics such as extraterrestrials, ghosts, interdimensionals, and aliens. We examine evidence, anomalies, archaeological ruins, and anthropology.
We explore past lives, future lives, life between lives. We get into astral projection, near-death experiences, archetypes, visions, and dreams.
Episodes include time travel, teleportation, counseling, spirituality, tantra, relationships, peace, shamanism, peak experiences, and ego transcendence.
Join the lessons Saturday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com for The Sacred Matrix, a divine paradigm of love.
Okay, so someone's just put in the chat room, ever put a peep in the microwave? Now, I think what you mean by a peep, is that a chocolate-covered marshmallow thing? No, I haven't. However... No, I've got to resist it. I ate too much sugar yesterday, and I binged out on the marshmallows toasted in the wood-burning stove. They were just absolutely fantastic. And after Wolf Baby went home, because we had some then, I had some more. I confess, I had a sugar binge, and I'm suffering from it. And I want to talk about this. Last year, about this time, I got very sick, and my body just kind of... Yeah, I was talking about it on air, on Journeys. This is part of the journey, I believe. It's the journey, it's the part that is not very pleasant, because it's the cleansing of all the clagged up toxins that we've dragged around and slept around, and our bodies are not taking it anymore. And they're saying, here, you can have this stuff back now. Basically what started happening was that I couldn't eat anything that, well, for a start, I couldn't eat anything that wasn't cabbage, wasn't lettuce on one day. You know, I could hold down nothing apart from lettuce. You know, anything that was like really raw or green, I could eat. That's like, lettuce is a sort of generic thing for sort of green, raw things. And it came to a point when I was talking to my guides, and they were saying, well, basically, you've got to get used to a more vegan diet. And I'm going, vegan? You're kidding me. I think I would use stronger language than that. They just said, you know, just try to stop eating death. And it just made sense. It's, when they said that, it's like, all right, I get you. Because by eating meat, you're funding the death industry, that thing that you want to stop. So by, and the death industry is, I mean, only one tiny subsection is what we call meat. A lot of it is, you know, what to do with all the corpses. What do you do with corpses? It's a very ancient industry. What do you do with corpses? If you have horses, you can take them apart, you can boil them and glue, and make glue. You know, if you're cows, you cut them up. You know, put them in hamburgers. If, you know, they're not cows, you can cut them up and put them in hamburgers. And, you know, if they're people, you can probably cut them up and put them in hamburgers. And still, nobody would know the difference. Oh, it's a chicken burger. Yeah, it's a pork burger, you know. But essentially, what do you do with all the corpses? There's only so much glue you can make. What do you do with it? And this is part of the whole prison industrial meat complex that I believe is what is called the death industry. You know, everything to do with death, from producing it to producing things that produce death, all the way to the, keeping the animals alive through antibiotics and pharmaceuticals, everything that is wrong with our world is the death industry. You know, it sounds a bit like a blame thing, but it's like that's how we've. It's a bit like our dark side. We've singled out our dark side. They do all the dirty work, like that commercial says. They do all the dirty work, and the trouble is that when you get people to do the dirty work, you know, they might do the dirty. And for instance, the company that is probably formerly known as Halliburton, is one of these companies that does the dirty work. They do, you know, they clean out prisons and clean out stables and all other forms of, waste and, you know, having to deal with all that. But they also have, you know, they're also to deal with oil wells and sealing oil wells, you know, with great competence, which they seem to be unable to do. Anyway, long story. But about a year ago, Nancy, I started getting this whole thing, and I'm suspecting that a similar process around this time, around this cycle, is happening to you, and it's a clearing of your solar plexus.
Well, my attitude was that if somebody had asked me, I would have designed the whole thing differently. The concept of killing to eat was appalling to me, but at the same time, it was the deck that I was dealt, and so it wasn't anything that I was going to fight. You know, it was like that battle. I'm just going to be a human being, do the best I can, and not worry about this because there's so many other things to worry about. But I think it you're right that it's like all of a sudden your body is going like I don't like this. I don't like this, you know. And whether I don't think it could be limited to one, you know, of the chakras. I think that it has to be an entire thing. It might be focused on that chakra, but you know, in reality, I think it's everything. It's like, you know, I mean, I've seen people go vegetarian and not make it. You know, it's like, no, you know, I gotta. And so it's not that kind of a mentality. It's just, it's surprising to me. But I'm willing to go with it, you know. All right. You know, whatever works. As long as my body's happy, I'm happy. I don't get into the head trip about food. I do, in that I do have a garden. And I continually fantasize about having a bigger garden because there is, without a doubt, a totally different experience from eating live food that you just picked out of the garden compared to any other thing. It's virtually orgasmic as far as your cells are concerned. It's pure unadulterated energy. Boom.
It's lovely. I've got these kale plants. Wolf Baby planted them last year in one afternoon. She planted a whole bunch of plants. And these kales have just kept growing. I've been waxing on about them, but today they're almost gone to seed, but they've got these tops that are tender. And, you know, I just had a stir fry and just snapped the tops off these things. And, yeah, like they are. They're just like delicious sweet cabbage. Very sweet.
Well, down here in South Florida, years ago, decades ago, I used to have a pot and it with a kale plant in it, and it never died. It just kept putting out more and more leaves. I mean, I ate off of that thing for years, and unfortunately, I had a flood and I lost it in the flood. But kale is probably the best thing anybody can eat. And it's so easy to grow. I don't know what's happened to the vegetables here, but these kale plants that I was growing that were a good 18 inches or more of the leaves. Now I can't get them. I can't get back to that kale that was so good. Now what I get are these little teeny things that are very disappointing. And the other thing that's really weird is mustard. Mustard is the other thing. It's just easy to grow, you know, grows for a long time. Wonderful, wonderful taste to it. And I couldn't get any mustard. Any kind of mustard. And I, you know, it's like one of those things where you go like, what's this about? So, we have to be able to get to a point where we can, as the people, not the, you know, GMOs, that the people can control the seeds. We have to start paying more attention to the Mother Earth's gifts to us because we're losing what really works. the heirloom plants. And the powers that be want to control all the food so we can't get any of the good stuff. And we've got to stop them. The GMO thing is a mistake on their part, in my opinion, because the results of what's happening are so horrific that I don't, you know, I mean, as soon as people realize what's really happening with this stuff, that's going to end very quickly because people just stop buying it. But we're not interacting with Gaia, Gaia being the Earth Mother, we've got a biosphere. The biosphere cannot exist if it doesn't have a consciousness. And that consciousness is what has created everything. Everything. So if you want to look for God, do not look outside of the universe. Do not look outside of the galaxy. Do not look outside of the solar system. Look at Earth. There is a consciousness behind Earth. I call it Gaia, as do many other people. I was never into this mindset until after I started writing Cosmic Reality. And it was really at the end of Cosmic Reality that I realized this, you know, it was like, duh. And if we don't respect Gaia as a god, what are the other gods going to think? I mean, yes, there may be only one god, but one god who's all-powerful and all-knowing is smart enough to create creator gods that will watch things. Because, I mean, God wants to watch everything. No, you're responsible for this and you're responsible for that, and let's see what happens. I mean, to think that one God is responsible for everything, you give him the power to create other gods. And in our case, our God is Gaia. And we have got to do everything we can do to empower her. And the first thing that's required is acceptance of that fact that Gaia exists. So I'm writing the book. I've got none of this in my head. I mean, this was not something I was ever really thought about much. And I thought I was finished with the book, and I write about why, but there were certain things that happened, and all of a sudden it was like I got it. I got it. We have to focus local. We have to think about what's around us. And we have to acknowledge the spiritual entity of a consciousness that has created everything that exists for us. And to me, that's Gaia. So I'm going back to the concept of reality building. So I went with the idea that Gaia is supreme. She's the boss. And anything that I do, I want to be dedicated to making things better for Gaia. And not in the concept of going out and fighting the fluoride question or the cell problems with the electromagnetic pollution. Not to go out and to do that, but to concertedly work in my own mind to empower Gaia. Because at the end of the book, and I mean, a friend of mine, she was talking about Gaia, and I said, you know, did you read the end of the book? No, I haven't read the end of the book. Well, go look it up. So she looks it up, and she reads it, and she's reading it to me, and I'm crying. Now, yes, I wrote it down, but it certainly was not my inspiration. It was, you know, just coming to an understanding of the basic truth that we have a god, a local god called Gaia, who all we have.
Okay, that's me back on the air, and now I'll bring Nancy back to the call. And everything just completely failed at my end there, so I don't know what happened there. And we should be having Nancy back any second now. I don't know what happened there. Nancy,
hi,
are you back?
Yeah.
I'm sorry about that. When did you lose me?
I didn't hear you. I was still talking.
Oh, good. Well,
so I might have dropped off, and you might have been talking. But no, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I lost my end. Everything dropped my end. So I didn't think we were talking about anything controversial.
I was talking about Gaia and how we should respect her, and that, you know, that's the only way we're going to get out of this is to you know, put our thoughts and our loves behind Gaia, because Gaia will give back. And one of the things that we've talked about before is a town in England where the women's club decided to start putting gardens, growing gardens so people could take the vegetables. And the hardest thing they had to do was convince them, no, we want you to take the vegetables out of our gardens. And pretty soon the entire town became this garden after garden, and all of the police, the space around the police station and the county properties and stuff, all had gardens, and everybody would take what they needed, and then other people would take from their gardens. Now, this is a town. It happens.
Absolutely. And I saw that a couple of years ago, and soon after that, we have this gardening competition that, you know, all the towns compete with each other to see who makes the prettiest flower displays, and it's really boring because it's the same displays. You know, there's the peacock and there's a little snowman. Like, it's stupid. Anyway, so I went up to one of the ladies when she was watering the flowers, and I said, I'd like to suggest something to your committee, and wouldn't it be nice if you could eat all of your displayed food that actually that, you know, the forest in bloom was actually edible blooms and beautiful food that people could take home and eat. And she said, oh, I don't know about that. Anyway, a very good friend of mine is now involved with the local council and the local flower exchange, seed exchange, and all of this stuff. And that's what they're going to be doing more and more. They're going to have more and more edible displays in the town. So this is actually going to be happening in our very town. And Wolf Baby will be part of it. She's creating a garden that is an astrological garden, which is a... each zone has its particular flowers and its particular energies, and there'll be crystal displays and water fountains and all that sort of stuff. It's a quite a small area, but it's like a little zone with zones in it. That's going to be her creation.
Everybody should have just a little garden, you know. Even if it's just you get a big pot and you put in a little bit of this and a little bit of that, just to experience the wonder of growth. Because, I mean, there's a lot of people who have never actually paid attention to, you know, watching food grow. And there's how many, I mean, when every time I have a tomato, a really good off-the-vine tomato, I think about the fact that I was so lucky to experience this, because so many people will never, ever, ever eat a potato off a vine. And there's nothing like it in the world. So if people would just start to, you know, just make it a little thing for your kids. Oh, let's grow a little garden. Once you understand it and once you start participating in it, then you take the next step and the next step. Because it's all available to us, but we just are lazy. Oh, I think I'll go to the grocery store.
Here's the best thing, the easiest thing. They're called mung beans, M-U-N-G. And you go to your local supermarket and look in the Chinese section, and you put about half an inch of these little beans in a jar. You soak them over, you know, soak them for 24 hours. They'll swell up. You drain them, and you just get them wet. You just rinse them every day, and put them in a window. And that's the easiest way of growing food. And it's you can put them in your stir fries, put them in salads. It's bean sprouts. And I've inspired a couple of people by, you know, because I have my little bean sprout cycle. I can't say I do it every day. I'm not really that disciplined. I've spoken about this before. But I've been, because it takes discipline to keep your plants watered every day. You know, I've never been like, it's like, anyway, it's like keeping pets, but luckily the pets don't run away. And you don't need to put them on a leash, and they don't chew up the furniture, and they don't rip up your shoes. But anyway, meanwhile, they don't get fur all over you. However, plants are very, very much handier than that. And but the thing about bean sprouts is that, you know, unless you happen to be sensitive to them, like some people... you have to. It's like a free food that is just really nutritious and fun to grow and really easy. You know, you don't, and that's where I started. Because once I got my confidence growing bean sprouts, I got the idea of this is the process that the seeds go through.
Exactly, and all it takes is this one experience, you know, just... what was that? Spell that again, the bean sprout that you use.
Mung. M-U-N-G.
M-U-N-G.
Yeah. M for mother, U for uniform, N for November, G for golf.
M-U-N-G. Because sprouts are the quickest way to go from growing to eating. You know, and anybody that, you know, go online and just look up on the quickest way to get some a little bit of a sprout garden going. You'll never regret it.
Yeah, buy a jar of pickled gherkins, right? Nice big fat jar. They're really cheap, right? Eat the gherkins and throw away the juice. Wash it out, put some holes in the lid, and then you've got a sprout garden. That's it. That's all you need.
Exactly.
So, sprouting seeds, getting them. So, let's talk about shungite, shall we?
Yes.
And why people need some, and why they should buy it from you.
Okay. shungite is, okay, I go through the process of reality creating again. I go through the process of committing myself to this concept that Gaia is God, and everything I should do should be directed towards basically feeding her as much energy. Because, see, this was based on a science that many, many scientists got involved in different parts of the world, but they realized that you cannot have creation without a consciousness. So in the mathematics and in the science, you have to have a consciousness. So this consciousness, they decided, was going to expand itself, because when its creations became smarter and expanded themselves, that means us, then that energy would feed the higher consciousness of the planet's creator God, and that consciousness would grow. So it was kind of like prophesized through science that there would be a leap in this consciousness, and it's a noosphere, and there's a lot of writing, and I really am going to try to get into some of that because it's fascinating. But so I knew that this was scientifically supposed to be what was happening. I wrote Cosmic Reality. I was led to the realization, and so I spent a lot of energy feeding positive thoughts into the conscious evolution of Gaia herself. And I believed that human beings, in order to sort of like help her jump to a higher consciousness and also jump ourselves, that we were going to have to develop shaman consciousness. And shaman consciousness allows you to use your mind in a way that is, you can think of it as imagination, but it goes beyond imagination. So when you go beyond imagination, you are into a manifestation concept. And there were some people on the internet that were very concerned about all the EM and the artificial signals that they're putting in people's heads, mind control and a lot of other things. And I was very frustrated because I have come to the realization that most of the questions that I ask, and many that seem improbable for an answer, never mind a quick answer, do have quick answers. So I asked, I said, please, is there something I can give these people to turn them to that will negate all this bad energy and we can get on with things? And an hour and a half later, I found the shungite. So I've done the research in the shungite, and one of the problems is that there's a lot of people that are out there, and I mean a lot of people, who are into the shungite, but we are all having the problem of getting back to somebody that seems to really know what they're talking about. And today I found that guy, or at least it could be the guy. He's a doctor, and let me just see what his credentials are here. He's Dr. Yuri Kalinin. and he's the Doctor of Technical Sciences and the Director of General of Research and Production Complex in the Republic of Karela, which is the place that the Shungite is located in. And his, the paper that I'm reading, I tried to go online and see, well, is there, can I find out more about the guy? And I found a YouTube presentation where he was being talked to for about 25 minutes, but it was in French. But somebody found another version of him talking that was with the subtitles. So the guy is definitely real. And some of the information that he presents is, I hadn't seen quite the way that he presents it. But because what he's doing is he's analyzing Shungite in relationship to the economics and where the better stuff is, and also into some of the scientifically proven things that Shungite is actually being used for. It's estimated, he says, to be 1.5 billion tons of Shungite, but it's only found in Russia. Now, there is a version of Shungite that is was actually used to build St. Petersburg. That was the first time that they started using Shungite for like masonry. And so that was the first time they used it. And it might have been some of the good stuff, but it's more likely that it was from this other deposit that is, instead of the 30 to 70% carbon in the field, there's only like 5%. And so sometimes you have to be careful, because some of the Shungite that's out there, now I haven't found it, but people are warning that there's some of the Shungite that is not the Shungite that comes from the, oh boy, I don't even know if I can pronounce the name. It's Zazhoginsky. And that's where the field is, that is the one that has the 35 to 70% carbon in it. And the carbon, as you have talked about so many times, Jay, is that buckyball carbon that's like a soccer ball. And you only find it in Shungite. And there's another location in a gold mine in Russia and a gold mine in Canada. And in a meteorite strike in Canada, they also found it, and they also find it out in space. So it's a very unique molecular configuration of Shungite, even though it's based on the concept of being a carbon that then can go through coal, and then if you put it under pressure and temperature, you go to graphite, and then more pressure and temperature, and you've got diamond. This stuff doesn't do that. Heat and pressure doesn't seem to change it. That's what this new doctor said. That's what I hadn't heard before. So in 1972, they started to use raw shale Shungite, and started to use it to in aggregate for concrete. And they started calling that Shungizit, S-H-U-N-G-I-Z-I-T. So that's also out there. And it's used for a lot of different things. Industrial, what they're doing is they're taking the high carbon Shungite in that Zazhoginsky field, and they use it for the production of cast iron. They also use it as a treatment in blast furnaces, because as I said, it doesn't seem like temperature affects this stuff. It also produce fine powders like sand, different versions of it, gradients of it. And they use it for purifying water, which is what we started hearing about it. But they're also using it, and he says, for filling radio shielding building materials. So if you want to have a building protected from electromagnetic crap, then you put the Shungite in a specific kind of paint, and you paint it on the building, and it shields the building from this radiation. Again, according to this doctor. Now I'm talking from somebody who seems to know what they're talking about, instead of people who are selling it that are repeating the things that they've heard, like I have had to do. But this seems to be a guy that really understands. He gets into the mineral structure of it, and but then he gets into the healing thing of it, because in the 1717 there was a study made because Tsar Peter the First had heard about the waters in the area where the Shungite is to be very healing. And after he heard more and more about what was happening with these waters, he started a resort that it was called the Marshall Waters. And they think that it was called that because of the god of war, Mars, because Peter had used this, that he had built the spa in order to heal soldiers that were wounded and sick with the Russian army. And as he learned more about what this Russian doctor is calling antiseptic properties of Shungite, he ordered that every one of his soldiers keep a knapsack with a flaky stone, and that they would put it in a pot of water to disinfect the water. Okay, now that's way back in the 1700s that they already were understanding the health benefits of the waters, and also the ability for the Shungite to act as a sorption, sorption, material to on filters for water purification. And they found that the Shungite used in that way had an antihistamine or an anti-allergic effect on the human body. That I had also never heard. It does remove, if you soak water, or you put them in water, the fluorines come out of the water, and the fluorines remove the free radicals that are in the water, and free radicals take on a lot of different forms. But excuse me, he says that the ability of the Shungite to work is 30 times better than activated carbon, which is what you find in most water purification systems. So they're using it in paints, concrete, brick, and finishing solutions. And in the masses, the production of such coatings like plaster and floor mixture of high strength and resistant, it resists fire, shock, fungus, and it protects against the electromagnetic radiation and radon, and also unfavorable factors of geoactive zones, static electricity, even x-rays. They take a room and they'll screen the entire room with Shungite materials to create conditions for comfort and health. And they're using that at the Military Medical Academy of Russia now. And they say that that the length of hospital patients with heart disease and hypertension was reduced by 3 to 4 days. And for a shorter period, managed to stop attacks of angina altogether. So, again, it's another known health aspect of Shungite. But why I found this to be such critical importance is that what they're saying, now listen to this, they're saying that they're taking a room and they're using materials built of Shungite around the room. And because they're now have this cocoon of Shungite, they've got people who are healing faster and healing better. They're not taking it into their system. They're not drinking water. They are in the energy field of Shungite. And that's where I come in. And hopefully soon you too, Jay, because we can take and we can get the fullerenes, which is an amazing thing. There's thousands and thousands of scientific documents on this. But we also have to look at the energy. And so if a room can protect somebody and heal somebody, then if you take a pendant of Shungite and you're wearing it up against your body within your own bioelectromagnetic field, that shungite is going to work in many ways. I believe what it does is that it takes negative energy and transmutes it into positive energy. And I say that because I've been using it now. I've been feeling it. I've been working with it. And that, what I just found today about that room, and you know, just makes it, because it's one thing for me to tell you all the energy is there. It's another for a highly documented, a highly accredited doctor in Russia who is studying this stuff to tell you that they're using these rooms to heal people, and they're using them within medical facilities run by the Russian army. This is big. This is very big.
Yeah, because you know that when the Russian army uses it, it's not like they don't treat things in a frivolous manner. Russian people are very, very serious about it. They're very earnest.
If they're using it, it's working.
That's right. And they've studied all this kind of stuff, and they've developed meters that we haven't got, haven't they?
I hope we've got them, because I do have two schedules of working with the shungite, where homes are going to be completely analyzed as to the electromagnetic signature, and then shungite is going to be added to the room in various different configurations to see, does it matter? My gut thing is that you could probably take a chip of it and put it on something, and it's going to change everything. But I'm not sure of that. And so we're gonna try. We hope we have the meters to be able to see it.
That's really interesting, Nancy. That just because, right? Okay, so let's bring a few of the guests together. Here's one. As you were talking about Clayton Nolte, right? Now his thing was structured water, and the way he was achieving it was basically running water through tiny spheroids. Okay, now
explain spheroids.
Spheroids, tiny little spheres, tiny balls.
I know that, but I wanted your audience to know that.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Sorry.
Tiny balls. Anyway, meanwhile.
Sorry.
So, what I believe is happening inside the shungite is that energy, which is ambient and random and scattered, is kind of whenever it comes towards it, when it comes towards it's like hitting the side of a geodesic dome. This is exactly what it's like. And the curvature of that is what Stillings would say congenial to the way the energy moves, and it forms it into a spiral that is at once clockwise and at the same time anti-clockwise, and this is what they call structured, in his form it's called structured water, but energy is doing the same thing. Water does the same thing as energy, and energy does the same thing. So we can say that the form of these things does it. It's as if each, if you're imagining light coming towards this thing, it will glance off, but it glances off at a very gentle slope. And that's what they call phase angle. And Dr. Ibrahim was on Sean David Morton's show last week, and he was saying exactly the same thing, that by placing harmonic forms around and about the area in strategic positions, you can harmonize everything, and you strengthen everybody's immune system, and you could have pollution through the whole area. So what he's saying is that the radiant, it's a kind of radiant energy, but it's not radiant, it's resonant. It's like a particular form of ripple that is coming out from it that is harmonizing everything in its path.
I absolutely agree with that. And the thing to understand is that the scientists can give no reason for it existing. It should not be existing in a natural form. That's what keeps making them baffled. The reason that they ever came to understand the buckyball, the fullerene, was because they were theoretically deciding what kind of a molecule could exist in space. And then they made it in the lab, and then they went and tried to find it, and the only place they found it was in Shungite, and those two gold mines, and a meteorite strike, and out in space. It doesn't exist anyplace else on the planet. So to me, this was an immediate response by Gaia to give me an answer for everybody else. It's Shungite. If we use Shungite, if we get Shungite all over the world, it will completely negate all of the negative energies that human beings are putting out there. The powers that be or were totally underestimated Gaia. Gaia's awake, and Gaia says, we got this problem, I'll fix it. Here, take this Shungite. Make sure that every person everywhere has got Shungite. It will tear the fabric of negativity on the planet. And I know this in my heart. I've given Shungite to people, and I see this amazing transition in them. As soon as they get it, they start talking about Gaia. They make changes that they, you know, in a sudden heartbeat, it's like the things that are negative around them, they want to get away from. There's a lot of, it's not for sissies. I'll tell you that, it's not for sissies. Because it'll just disrupt everything in your life for the better. For the absolute better. And if you know that, and you know going into it, that, you know, I'm going to put a warning on the store. It's not for sissies. But once you get it out there, it just makes a tremendous amount of difference. I've got it now on all my animals. And I can tell you there are subtle changes, even in the ones that were healthy. They're more relaxed. There's something changes. The other thing that I did was I took a piece of Shungite, and not a very big piece, and wrapped it, and then wrapped, instead of making it into a pendant, I had a hook on it. And I took it, and I put it on the grill in front of my air purifying system. And as soon as I did, I got this image, and you're going to love this, Jay, I get this image of the air passing over the skin of the Shungite and being knocked into a better air. You know, just like you're saying, it was like almost like as it passes over, it either dislodges the fullerene, or it hits the fullerene, there's an interaction, and something happens to the air. But ever since I've had this in there, there is a definitive difference in the way the air feels. I don't know how to test that. But,
Do you know what I'm feeling? Okay, so here's the thing. Now, it says, this is about, like, if you had a drop of... If you look at the surface of water... There's a thing called surface tension that holds the water. So if you are, for instance, able to fill up a vessel that takes you just up to the brim and then just keep adding drop by drop, you'll actually build the water up a little bit above the surface of the edge of the vessel, of the glass. But if you were to take the tiniest amount of detergent, and put that on a match head and drop that into the middle, the surface tension would disrupt and release, and it would spill over the sides. So it sounds like you're talking about something like that, it destructures and restructures. It's like combing it. Unmute, Nancy?
Sorry, I was on mute. I can kind of visualize what happens when the air passes over it. What I see is if you think of an asteroid, the shape of an asteroid, that's the shape, you know, it's that kind of texture. It's got all these grooves and everything in it. And the air passes over it, and as it does, hits these geometric, you know, constructs of the molecular configuration of the Shungite and the structure of it itself, there's a turbulence that is created. And in that turbulence, fullerenes are actually added to the air. That's what I see is happening. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. I don't know how to test for fullerenes in the air. But something happens. And yes, it could be just the fact that the air itself, the molecules of of moisture and dust and everything, that they take on a different spin. But something happens. So I'm hoping that I can get more of these out to people and they can try to experience it themselves. Because some of the stuff we can figure out ways of testing for. But some of it, like this, it would take, capabilities way beyond anything I know how to tap. Go ahead.
You had another.
Well, I wanted to say something else about this this doctor, because something again that I had no clue about. He said that they put shungite in the diet of chickens, and what they found is that it offset the negative impact of low quality feed contaminated with toxins, and it lowered the acidity in soil and helped it preserve its moisture. And the effects on the crop yield was appreciable, that they could not attribute to mineral fertilizer. And then they had another where they did the same thing with the shungite in the soil, and the potatoes that they grew in it increased by 70% the productivity. So, I don't know where the end of what shungite has the potential for being is. And they're only really beginning to understand it. Now, Jay and I got involved in the shungite and trying to find out, to give you places where you can really get it. I ran into the problem of you got to make sure you get it from the right mine. So then I had to find somebody who could get to the right mine. So I did. And so now when I got the shipment on Saturday of 3 kilograms of shungite, it had come from the mine to the shipper dealer to me. And it had been untouched except for whatever happened at the mine. So when I got it in front of me, it was like, I can't even tell you, the experience was amazing. I mean, I could still, it had the smell of the mine. It's an earthy, wonderful smell. And it's just such a powerful, powerful energy that when I take it, and I know Jay will do the same thing, it's a sacred gift that we've been given to be able to work with this. And so when I take the wire, and it's different versions of wires, because for some reason, when you're doing pendants, different stones require maybe a bigger wire and lesser wires. And so I've got a variety of these pendants. So my energy and the energy of the people that would be working with this stuff is pure intent. We're working for Gaia. We're doing a mission for Gaia. We're getting this stuff in people's hands. And yes, we're going to charge you, because what I learned when I first got into the mineral business was that I would either overprice things or I would underprice things. I wanted to give it away on one hand, but if I really liked it, I'd put a price that nobody could afford except me, because I owned it. So I was a terrible business person, And what I realize now is that, yes, I have to create a business that will support itself so that I can do this mission. And the store is, I'm about ready to get the store up. I figure I'm probably still a week out, because you have to do all this stuff and you got to get shipping things taken care of and there's a whole bunch of stuff. But the product is here. Well, if I don't give it away. I've already given a lot of it away. But I've also got, like 3 kilograms sitting in the Merkaba, because that's the other thing, is that it gets here and then it goes into a pyramid where in Cosmic Reality, my book, you can read about all the magical things that happened when we were working this during the 1990s. And so it sits in there, and then it comes out of there and gets rinsed off, because there's all sort of dust on it, like coal dust. It gets all rinsed off there. And then it's put in water that has come from Sedona, Arizona. And then it is soaked in that water, so the energy of Sedona adds another quantum connection to it. So that what you're going to get when you get it from a source that you know is working for more than money. I mean, I'm in this because I so much believe in what we're doing. And when you've got that kind of energy behind it, by the time it gets to you, it's powerful. But it's also connecting you to all the way back to the mind, because we never lose that connection. So every piece of shungite is going to act like a wave from the ocean. And everybody that gets the shungite is going to know that this is not just a little piece. This is the entire field. You go back there every time you feel it, you touch it. The power of that field with your energy in it will grow more powerful and more powerful. And shungite will get more powerful and more powerful. And the powers that thought they could screw with Mother Nature are going to be waking up to a very new reality.
You know, just a few minutes ago, I had a glass. I've got a pint glass here, and I've got about a good handful of shungite at the bottom, and I filled it up with water about an hour ago. And you know it's ready because you get these bubbles on the side of the glass. The quicker, because I've had the shungite a couple of weeks and been using it like this, and it's been getting quicker, the time between filling the glass and the bubbles coming up. And as you were talking, I took a couple of sips of it, and I could feel it's just, I can feel those nanospheres, these tiny little globules that are life. You know, they're a community of carbon atoms, 60 carbon atoms in a little community. And when I visualize it, they're like joy. They are really happy to be in their little community with their own tribe. None of those bloody hydrogens.
That's funny. Well, you know, I do ask every stone. You know, you're okay with this. Everybody's okay with this. Everybody understands, you know, that this is this, that they never are disconnected. It's like a hive mentality. It's. I'll tell you, I've never experienced a mineral like this. It's just, it's a very special mineral, and I think that I'm hoping that we can get the science to confirm it, because if we can, then nobody can argue with us. But the idea that they have this room being used by the Russian military, and it's just a room that's, you know, shielded in shungite, and there's healing that happens inside of it, well, just imagine it on your chest, linked to the entire 35 million tons of shungite that is sitting there. A gift from Mother that they can't explain why it exists. Because it's all this buckyball. See, I think of it as like a little quantum universe inside each one of these molecules. And like you say, it's just full of joy. I get happy, and I mean, I'm surrounded by this stuff. I'll tell you one thing. You have to be a little careful when you're messing around your computer with it. I've learned to keep it away from the computer, because I'll start playing with it, and all of a sudden little things will happen. And I was like, what is it, you know? And it's the shungite. I got a ton of shungite right under the computer. And somebody had it on the mouse, and all of a sudden the computer started to do weird things. It was like it was flicking the mouse. Because it also has this bizarre thing where it has conductivity.
Nancy, how can people find you and get hold of some?
CosmicReality.net. You can get me there. I'm on Facebook, and we're going to put the store on CosmicReality.net. Probably in a week, but I will let everybody know. Thank you. Love you.
Nancy L. Hopkins, thank you very much, my dear. Thank you. Good night, everybody.
Shungite.
Shungite for power.
Choose Sun Shungite for a happy future.
Other Side Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.